Sandra Oldendorf is a member who wears many hats in our fellowship. She's currently a member of the board, co-chair of the New Home Steering Committee, and on the Sunday Services Committee. She is a retired social studies educator from Appalachian State in Boone, North Carolina. Currently, she supervises student teachers and teaches a freshman seminar at MSU. She also volunteers at the Museum of the Rockies and the Gallatin History Museum. Her presentation to us this morning is Religion Comes to the Gallatin Valley.
I'm going to begin with a poem I found from a pioneer whose last name is Horn. When God made man, he seemed to think to make him in the east. Excuse me. I'm going to try to start that again. When God made man, he seemed to think it best to make him in the east and let him travel west. So much has been written about the West. It is touted as a place of entrepreneurship, independence, mountains that bring inspirational majesty, gold rushes, migrations, diversity of cultures, and colonialism. But how did the communities actually get started? Establishing schools and local government was important, of course, but nothing was more important than the establishment of churches. From Native American spirituality to religions from around the world, the Gallatin Valley was, and still is, evolving as a vibrant microcosm of religious diversity. In the mid-19th century, one would have heard many different languages spoken on the dirt, mud streets of Bozeman, and the people who spoke these languages came from many different religious traditions. As I began my research, I learned a lot of fun facts. This includes how many place names in the Gallatin Valley have religious connections, such as Penwell, or Alderson, or Rouse. Or the fact that the first Baptists in the Valley met above a saloon called Chestnut's Folly. I also learned that in the early days, people were not particular about what services they attended. There was a crossover between Presbyterians, Methodists, Episcopalians for certain, but also between Catholics and Protestants. On the other hand, the Presbyterians in Bozeman were alarmed when a congregational church was founded in Livingston in 1883. The leaders met together and decided to work for common purpose with the understanding that there was room for only one church, or when there was only room for one church, priority of entrance on the field should be respected, unquote, which meant respect who got there first. In the Gallatin Valley, I learned that the Presbyterians brought the first school for young women called the Gallatin Valley Female Seminary, and later another school called the Bozeman Academy. Methodist deaconesses brought the hospital. The deaconesses were women who dedicated their lives to service, caring for patients, cleaning the hospital, and typically received a small stipend plus room and board. The Christian Reformed Church established a brand new community for the people of Dutch descent. The Seventh-day Adventists formed Mount Ellis Academy, still in existence today. And some of the members of the Methodist Episcopal Church were some of the 11 African Americans who lived in this community in the 1860s to 1890s. And the Dry Creek Bible Church claims to be the longest meeting Protestant church in Montana. As you can see, there are many stories to tell. Since I didn't want to try your patience or scare the new visitors away, I had to make some choices. So I will share some stories from Native American spirituality, Catholics, Methodists, Presbyterians, Episcopalians, Lutherans, and Seventh-day Adventists, Christian Reformed, and a little bit about the Unitarians. Other stories will have to wait for another day. So, of course, religion did not come with European Americans. The deepest spiritual roots of the Gallatin Valley and the Bridger Mountains came from Native Americans who hunted and fished here on what is known as the common hunting ground, although Walter Fleming, the chair of the Native American Department at MSU, calls it the common disputed ground. They were here for thousands of years. They included the Crow, Blackfeet, Shoshone, Bannock, Salish, Sioux, Nez Perce, Piegan. Although their spiritual practices and ceremonies would have differed somewhat from each other, they all had a reverence for and shared a bond with the natural world. But as Catholics and Protestants came to the Valley, Indian religion practices were discouraged and even made illegal and punishable by an edict from the Bureau of Indian Affairs. It's ironic today that so many people come to this part of the world and find the mountains, the animals, and the rivers a place of spiritual renewal. What brought the churches of European origin to Montana and to the Gallatin Valley? Well, the same things that brought people in general: gold. In fact, some of the ministers who came, although they were ministers, they actually came to find gold. Land, the railroads, a chance to begin anew, and missions to convert the Indians. And although most of these Europeans were men early on, it's the women who had some of the greatest influence in getting the churches established. The earliest missionaries in Montana were the Jesuit fathers, and possibly the first mass to be said in Gallatin County was offered by the renowned missionary Father Jean-Paul de Smet. In his diary, he speaks of entering Montana in late 1840, accompanied by 1,600 Indians, to a camping ground at Red Rock Lake. They later moved following the buffalo and pitched a camp near the Three Forks of the Missouri River. It was called the Many Come Together Country. De Smet states in his diary, "The few weeks that I've had to spend among the Indians have been the happiest of my life and gives me firm hope with the grace of God to see soon in this country so long forsaken the fervor of the first Christians." And of course, he went on to the Flat-Haired area and established St. Ignatius. Over 25 years later, and 15 years after the founding of Bozeman, Holy Rosary Parish was formed as the first Catholic community in the area. Although church leaders from St. Louis had tried to start a church earlier, they didn't feel there were enough Catholics to get that started. And the Catholics here were served by traveling priests in the same way as Protestants were served by circuit riding preachers. Father Joseph Geedy was sent from the Diocese of Helena to build a church in Bozeman, and Walter Cooper generously donated four lots on what is now the corner of 7th, South 7th and Mendenhall. Another priest came to complete the construction, Cyril Paul Wellen, and he was the first priest ordained in Montana. In 1885, the church was dedicated and named after Our Lady of the Most Holy Rosary. When the church opened in 1886, 7th Avenue was not yet a street, but fenced ranch land. From a history of Holy Rosary, I found this quote: "It was a common sight on Sunday mornings to see Catholic people on their way to Mass, climbing under fences, wading through knee-deep mud, and farmers' horses and buggies hitched all around." In the 1900s, Bozeman was expanding quickly, and soon the church on South 7th was too small. Father Joseph Thompson began the challenging task of a larger building on 3rd and Main, and work on that church began in 1907. The Methodists were the first Protestant church to make an impact in the Valley. In the 1860s, circuit riding Protestants representing about nine different denominations came to Montana to administer to the gold camps. I have to imagine that had to be very challenging. The most famous is probably Brother Wesley Van Orsdale, better known as
Brother Van.
He was a friend of Charlie Russell. Charlie Russell remembers those early years when he first met Brother Van at a ranch in the Judith Basin. In Russell's words, quote, "These men who knew little law, and one of them I knew wore notches on his gun, men who had not prayed since they knelt at their mother's knees, bowed their heads while you, Brother Van, gave thanks," unquote. W.W. Alderson was born in England and emigrated to Illinois, where he was ordained as a Methodist minister. He came to the Gallatin Valley in July. He ended up staying here, but he was actually on his way to Alder Gulch to look for gold. He claimed land and began to farm and work on the fringes of gold camp life. He received a license as a local preacher in the Methodist Episcopal Church, authorizing him to preach the gospel subject to the requirements of the disciplined denominations. However, I read from another source that Reverend Alderson was considered just a bit of a maverick and maybe wasn't quite as true to the doctrine as this says he was supposed to be. The first services were held at a cabin owned by Merritt and Oscar Penwell in the East Gallatin area, about 12 miles north of Bozeman. in 1865. Reverend Alderson also organized the first Sunday school and later on was a major factor in getting the first buildings here. The first frame building where they met was on Main and South Templar, which is now known as Tracy. School was held in the building until a school building in Bozeman was constructed. The first church in Bozeman was completed in 1868. The Abbot Courier at the time told us about some of the things that went into the cornerstone. A Bible in the time capsule, a Bible, history of the church in Bozeman by Reverend Alderson, membership list, names of officers, church papers, and so on. Revivals were also held by the Methodist in the area in Montana and in this area. And I also found an interesting note that in 1877, the Montana Mission held its conference in Bozeman at a little church on Olive. Delegates worried, quote, that the bishop might not make it safely with Chief Joseph and the Nez Perce on the loose. In 1866, Montana, Utah, and Idaho were carved away and placed under the supervision of a young Episcopal minister, fresh from his first parish in upstate New York. Daniel Sylvester Tuttle was born in New York and elected as a bishop before he was 30. But he was sent to the West. It was believed then that if you were going to be a minister in the West, you had to be young in order to survive. So he left his wife and child, and he came to Denver, where he wrote his will, because he was getting a little taste of what it meant to be in the West. He landed in Virginia City, and he had trouble finding men suitable for confirmation. In a letter, he said, quote, "We mean to cut down the number from 9 to 7. We mean to throw out at least drunkards and violent swearers. Aside from them, the other 6, at best, will have to be Unitarians." Drinkers and decent world's men. When Bishop Tuttle came to Bozeman in 1867, he wrote, "At Bozeman I found only 2 communicants of our church. The place as yet had only weekly mail. I went in and out with the mail carrier." Tuttle conducted a service in July at the Methodist, where the Methodists were meeting, which was also served as the courthouse, and they had to clean the tobacco juice off the floor in order to have services. Although ministers were often sponsored by mission boards, when they actually got west, they found out they were ministering to many people other than the people of their particular faith. Bishop Tuttle wrote that in a Bozeman service in 1867, the lay leader was a Baptist who was having difficulty following the prayer book and usually closed his services with an extemporary supplication. And supplication. In recounting his first service in Bozeman, Tuttle said, "Almost nobody of my own prayer book's church was there, but all, whether born or bred, helped me to carry the service through. And all, the miners, ranchmen, lawyers, witnesses, traders, sportsmen, took a hand in making the collection liberal and large." So I guess that's the important thing. They raised a little money and were finally able to establish an actual church called St. James, which was called that because they were given a silver service from St. James Parish in Philadelphia. The church was built by an architect named George Hancock, who came to Bozeman because he thought he could get in on the building of the state capitol. But since that didn't work out, he built St. James instead. The Ladies Guild was formed in 1875, and they did all kinds of things to raise money, cooked food, sewed and sold some of the things they made. The bishop told them that at the end of the year, if there was a deficiency in the salary of the rector, they were expected to make it up. The Presbyterians, under the creed of John Knox, the Scottish founder, seemed to fit well on the frontier. That creed nourished a people faced with the stern realities of a life difficult, poor, and often dangerous. In the mid-1830s, Samuel Parker, sponsored by the American Home Missionary Society, joined a group of fur traders going up the Missouri. It was reported that the group resented his presence because it interfered with cussing and heavy drinking. It appears he performed the first Protestant service, Presbyterian service in Montana near Lolo. The Gold Rush and railroads brought many more Presbyterians, but what helped the Presbyterians really stick was the fact that they thought it was very important to build schools. And that's one of the things that they did here in the Gallatin Valley. Permanent congregation was not established here until 1872. And one of the leaders was Lyman Crittenden. His daughter Mary opened a school called the Ladies Home Mission, well, excuse me, no, it's called the Gallatin Valley Female Seminary. And she was there for 3 years. She ran the school. There was really not a lot of education available to people, so this was important. And she did it for 3 years until she got married, so she was no longer allowed to run the school. And she had about 40 girls from ages 7 to 20 when she closed. Her comment was, that it was important to have her school here because it served a group who otherwise would have been subjected to convent indoctrination and the Romanish sisters. In 1887, Edward Linnell opened the Bozeman Academy, and it closed after a few years because a state university was opened here in 1893. When Charles Richards, who came here to lead the Presbyterians in 1877, noted, there were 13 resident members, having one elder, no deacons, no trustees, nothing to trust them with, no Sunday school and no prayer meeting. Father Crittenden had not been able to visit for a while. In the families of the members, there were only a few children old enough to attend Sunday school. He said that the most important resource they had was willing hands and prayerful hearts. I just wanted to note that at the 25th anniversary of the Presbyterian Church, Reverend Norman McLean, John Norman McLean, came to speak, the father of Norman. The Dutch Reformed Church, of course, came to what we now know as Manhattan in the 1890s. A group of folks of Dutch heritage came there and started the Manhattan Malting Company, which surprised me. I didn't expect that because that was a pretty group strong in many, many beliefs, and this was a little bit of a surprise. But of course, today we know them. Many of them are involved in farming in different ways. The first church established there, though, was actually helped, so the Presbyterians helped support get it started. But after a while, some of those folks who were Christian Reformed didn't feel at home with that particular doctrine. And so eventually the Presbyterians essentially gave them the land, and they were able to establish a Dutch Reformed church. The church itself was, the land for the church was given to them by one of the members, and the land was rolling and hilly. I think you see where I'm going with this. So the land where they chose to build the church was on a hill. Yeah. That's why we have Church Hill. Seventh-day Adventists came in 1902, and I just wanted to give them a nod because they're one of the churches that actually, instead of starting other places in Montana, they started in this region. And of course, they established Mount Ellis Academy. And I also wanted to note that the land was given to them to start that by Elisha Ross. A quick thought about the Lutherans, because I thought what was particularly a couple of interesting things about them is that they came as missionaries first to the Crow Indians, which was highly unusual. Lutherans generally came to places where there were already Lutherans. They preached to the already converted, as they said. And unfortunately, these missionaries were killed, we believe, by the Crow Indians. Eventually, a church was started in Bozeman, and what's interesting about it is that it was called the Bozeman English Evangelical Lutheran Church, and that's because they chose to do the services in English. Most of the churches, with these Norwegians, were all done in the Norwegian language, but they wanted people to see them as American. Right after World War I, and just before, as right as we were getting into the Depression, many folks felt very discouraged and hopeless. And so they changed the name of the church to Hope Lutheran. There's a cute story about the ladies cooking dinners and having a lot of cleanup because they had to work with a coal stove, and the odors from the lutefisk dinner remained for days afterwards. Unitarians were actually here earlier than you would think. The Reverend Henry Bond and his wife were sent to the Crow Reservation to start a school, and they did. He did emphasize that he wasn't there to Christianize the Indians, but he was there to educate them. But he made a number of comments suggesting he really was discouraged by the way they lived and didn't respect them in the way we would like to think a Unitarian would have respected them. And so that was part of that story. The school eventually was taken over by the federal government and later closed. Unitarians actually started in Helena in 1891 and eventually were able to build a church, but their numbers diminished, and so they ended up losing the church. They gave it to become a library, and today it's the Grand Street, I'm losing my notes here, so what's it called today? Grand Street Theater. However, this is the end of the story. Unitarians and Universalists started up fellowships in the 1950s in Montana, and many of those survive today. In conclusion, what did I learn? Well, as a UU, I learned that we were not the first in the valley to respect the interdependent web of all existence of which we are a part, or the inherent worth and dignity of every person, or the acceptance of one another and encouragement to spiritual growth in our congregations. I was reminded that UUs draw from world religions which inspire us in our everyday life. I was reminded we draw to celebrate the sacred circle of life and to live in harmony with nature. Those who came before us in the Gallatin Valley, we should remember. They helped lay the foundations of our beliefs today and the community that many of us call home.